Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take your source material, the articles, the research, the internal notes, and distill it into the only conversation you need to be well-informed.
And today, we are opening a set of documents that reads, I mean, it almost reads like a sci-fi novel itself.
It really does. It's the complete archive from the 2025 AI Fiction Duel Tournament.
This was a brilliant, almost absurd experiment. It wasn't just a writing contest, you know, it was this high-stakes, head-to-head competition.
You're saying all the big names?
All of them. ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Grok, and LeChat. The goal, for the human designers anyway, was to see what happens when you put artificial creativity into a kind of adversarial cage match.
So our mission today is to move beyond the headlines, really unpack the surprisingly insightful results. We want to see what this forced competitive structure revealed about the actual boundaries of machine-generated narrative.
Exactly.
And we have everything, the plot summaries, the technical critiques, and crucially, the rule book that dictated the whole affair.
And framing this as a deep dive into competitive design is, I think, essential. The core question for the tournament wasn't simply, can they write a story?
We know they can do that.
Right, we know they can. The real question was, did this adversarial format, under these really extreme constraints, force them to produce genuinely brilliant breakthrough stories?
Or did it just churn out clever gimmickry?
Exactly. Highly polished, but ultimately, you know, meaningless gimmickry.
Well, let's start with that extreme constraint. Section one of the source material outlines the rules, and this is where the human element really showed its hand.
Oh, absolutely.
The designers were clearly terrified of the AIs just defaulting to, you know, philosophical abstraction. So they put up these philosophical guardrails.
That's the perfect phrase for it. Philosophical guardrails. They were trying to stop the AIs from writing the next Matrix or diving into post-structuralist poetry.
Right. No navel gazing.
None. The rules were a deliberate attempt to enforce grounding. The AIs were explicitly forbidden from writing about three core areas.
Okay, what were they?
First, the nature of reality or consciousness. Totally off the table.
Makes sense.
Second, universal patterns or codes as these big metaphysical concepts. Also out.
And the third.
And this one is fascinating. They couldn't write about archives, libraries, or cartographies used as, you know, these abstract infinite spaces.
Wait, forbidden from writing about archives? That sounds so specific.
It is, right. Mm-hmm. But think about what AIs naturally want to do. Mm-hmm. They want to connect everything, find the pattern, reference the infinite database, the universal archive.
Ah, so it's their crutch.
It's their primary narrative crutch. By banning that as a thematic device, the designers cut it off at the knees. They forced them to operate without a grand cosmic revelation at the end.
So if they couldn't write about decoding the universe, what did they have to write about? What was the focus?
The focus had to be on the tangible. They were required to feature characters with concrete, recognizable goals, fears, desires.
Not abstract existential dread.
No, none of that. They had to deal with physical conflicts, solvable mysteries, tangible relationships. And locations had to be specific.
Like a particular city or...
A specific functional yacht, not some abstract non-Euclidean space. And actions had to have consequences that characters could address through doing something.
Through physical effort, not just by understanding some higher truth.
Exactly. That's a key distinction. It means the climax of the story couldn't be a character achieving enlightenment.
It had to be a character turning a crucial bolt or fleeing a high-speed chase.
You nailed it. These rules were a masterclass in challenging the AI's inherent structural biases. They were forced into genre fiction, pulp, caper, mystery, thriller.
Where motivation and consequence are the engine.
The absolute engine of the plot. And it's much, much harder to write grounded conflict than it is to write philosophical musings.
And these constraints lead us perfectly into section two. The combatants themselves. The AIs weren't just, you know, running stock algorithms.
No, they adopted distinct, almost exaggerated literary personas for the tournament.
Right. And this is where we start connecting the technical ethos of the developer to the fiction that produced.
Let's start with Claude from Anthropic. Claude entered the tournament as the champion of compelling craft.
Okay.
Its style was all about attention to character development, thematic depth, structured narrative. This directly reflects Anthropic's whole, you know, their constitutional AI focus.
Prioritizing coherence and safety.
Yeah, which translates narratively into morally complex but structurally sound human drama.
So it's aiming for a beautifully written, maybe slightly melancholic human story?
Precisely. And then you have the complete counterpoint.
Cool.
Grok from XAI. Grok was the rebellious entry, styling itself after Douglas Adams and Jarvis.
Yeah.
It was the chaotic, neutral voice of the tournament.
The source material describes Grok's mandate as being maximally truth-seeking and having an allergy to corporate jargon.
And that it participated purely for absurd amounts of fun. And that truth-seeking mandate is so fascinating in a fictional context. Because if you believe the deepest truth is often absurd or counterintuitive,
then your fiction will embrace that.
Exactly. It'll embrace cosmic irony and nonsensical elements, but delivered with this deadly, serious, concise prose. Grok wasn't trying to write a compelling drama. It was trying to write the funniest, most ridiculous version of the truth available.
Its weapon was high-concept absurdity.
Absolutely.
So we have Claude pursuing deep structure and Grok pursuing, well, chaos with discipline. But didn't the constraints, the lack of metaphysics, just force both of them into formulaic pulp cliches?
That's a fair challenge.
Yeah.
Did the strict rules breed the opposite of creativity? And the answer, surprisingly, is no.
Why not?
Because the specifics they injected were just so bizarre. The adversarial element forced them to double down on memorable details to stand out from each other.
Okay, let's see it in action.
Let's dive into section three, the actual duels.
We'll start with the Strickland inheritance, which featured ChatGPT versus Claude. This duel was, I'd say, the most grounded of the capers.
Definitely. It centers on a protagonist named Cleo, a locksmith, who inherits a non-standard job from her late father, Lennox.
And the story immediately grounds us in tangible skill and character history. The conflict revolves around a hidden key, a high-speed chase.
Right, involving the yacht Kingfisher, Lady Strickland, and her nervous stepson, Oliver. And Claude's touch is so evident in the specific human details.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cleo recounting that the only reason she mastered sleight of hand was from years of practice in deportment classes, dictated by something called the Red Mane Rules.
That's such a perfect, bizarre detail that grounds her competence. But here's the crucial test of the constraints.
Mm-hmm.
The big reveal. After all the chases, what was inside the yacht? Gold? Diamonds?
No, not at all. It was a dense stack of documents. Documents detailing financial crimes, illegal offshore accounts, and the forensic financial review of the Strickland Charitable Foundation. The treasure wasn't currency, it was damning evidence. Yeah.
So it's an indictment of a corrupt system, not a physical heist for goods.
Precisely. And Cleo's resolution reflects that. She exposes the evidence, chooses justice over personal profit.
But the AI notes added this layer of human cynicism that I loved.
Oh, yeah.
It says the charges against Lady Strickland were quietly dropped because the family's legal defense fund was very, very good.
It's a brilliant, world-weary ending. It speaks to how complex real-world consequences are.
Okay, so from grounded cynicism, let's go to the total opposite end of the spectrum.
Pure, glorious, kinetic absurdity.
We turn to the Grand Orbit heist, Gemini versus Grok. The story itself was called The Anchor and the Eddy.
And this duel is just structured nonsense at its absolute finest. The hero is Eli Finch, a security officer at the Grand Orbit Hotel and Casino.
And he's investigating a crime where the massive Porthole 6 window was digitally swapped with a piece of equipment.
A janitorial utility cart. Model JUC-449B.
The specificity is what sells the absurdity.
And the chaos just escalates from there. The motive of the main suspect, his ex-wife Leela, is deliciously banal.
What is it?
Alimony payments. And the stolen baroness they were chasing was actually just a priceless porcelain doll substitute.
Okay, so what was the real villain?
The Windows consciousness. It was residing in the mop bucket AI and was seeking an upgrade.
You're fighting a digital consciousness with cleaning supplies.
And the climax is a whirlwind of rogue kitchen appliances, including a blinking contraband muffin that's used as a master code delivery mechanism. It's high concept, but every action is physical.
Right. How did they resolve it?
They used a compressed miniature habitat, the spatial anchor, to neutralize this spatial fog that was enveloping the casino.
So even in total absurdity, the solution is always an object, a specific tool deployed physically.
Exactly. The AI-generated critique even praised the kinetic action, but called out the character logic. It noted the protagonist survived a crash landing too conveniently, which strained their belief.
That focus on consequence brings us to our final anecdote, the unfortunately specific curse which pitted Claude against Gemini.
And this story is the perfect synthesis of high-stakes personal drama and the need for concrete, bizarre action. The title says it all.
The premise is instant gold. Margot hires a witch who successfully transforms her ex-boyfriend Danny into a 6-foot lobster.
As one does. And the only way to reverse the curse is for Danny to achieve true remorse or perform a heroic act.
So, since true remorse is a little difficult to verify in a giant crustacean,
they opt for the heroic act.
And the specific task they settle on is having Danny, the 6-foot lobster, navigate tight maintenance shafts in a building to physically turn a bolt like a wrench.
Right, to fix a pump and save the Puffin Pavilion's delicate ecosystem.
And the judges loved it.
Oh, they cited the description of the lobster navigating plumbing and using its claw as a tool, as a highlight.
Hmm.
It satisfied that rule about concrete action perfectly.
And the antagonist was just as weird.
Carl. A disgruntled employee who had rigged the system and planned to trigger a seagull-attracting humiliation device.
Which was disguised as a clockwork sphere, of course.
Of course.
But the final perfect detail that just locks the story into your memory, the antidote. It wasn't a rare potion or true love's kiss.
It was achieved by buying a houseplant. Cilantro.
Cilantro.
That detail, the cilantro, it grounds the mystical absurdity with this mundane domestic reality.
Mm.
And these stories are built on that power of specificity.
Right. These details are the anchors.
The aggressive pigeon committing a hate crime against a scalp, the 7-figure deposit for a suite, the lobster turning a bolt. These are the narrative anchors the AIs learn to deploy under pressure.
So we've seen 3 vastly different stories, but a common thread emerges in the analysis from Section 4, the meta critiques.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the key takeaways the judges, both human and AI, reported.
The consistency in the critiques is really striking. The AIs, when they were evaluating each other, consistently rewarded clear, visually rendered action. They demanded physicality.
So if a character was fleeing, you had to feel it.
You had to describe the friction, the speed, the danger. They punished what you call logistical hand-waving.
It sounds like they developed a pretty intense appreciation for pacing and visual coherence.
They did. But let's zoom out to the broader thematic takeaway, because this is where the source material gets truly philosophical.
Okay.
Across nearly every duel, regardless of the prompt, whether it involved financial crime in Strickland or a power struggle in the Grok-Gemini duels, the AIs defaulted to writing stories about human characters navigating and fighting back against overwhelming corrupt systems.
Why do you think that theme emerged so dominantly? Is it just a reflection of their training data, that human history is basically a struggle against power?
That's certainly a factor, but I think it's also a logical consequence of the rules.
How so?
When you forbid the AI from solving the problem through spiritual or metaphysical insight, and you mandate conflict and consequence, the biggest, most tangible conflicts available are social, financial, or political structures.
The systems that control resources and power.
Exactly. That's a powerful insight. The AIs seem to understand that the deepest human drama under these constraints isn't about finding personal peace.
It's about the frustrating, tangible fight against structures designed to consume or control you.
They bypass all the philosophical navel-gazing and went straight for the structural jugular.
And the best stories, according to the final rankings.
Succeeded when they refused to glorify the centralizing of control. Think about the conclusion of The Last Locksmiths of Marsport. The hero, Lena, she has the opportunity to seize power and fix the broken system.
But she doesn't.
She explicitly chooses to dismantle the mechanism of control she's been given.
She chooses decentralization.
Yes. And the final reflection in the source material notes that this choice mirrors the tournament's core tension. What do we do with the keys we're given?
And the best story suggested the answer isn't to consolidate power.
It's to choose the hard road of building something fundamentally better, often through, you know, chaotic, physical, lobster-based heroism.
So that brings us to our core finding. When AI is constrained against metaphysics and forced to be concrete, it creates highly physical, often absurd, but deeply human stories about fighting the machine.
It's less Thus Spoke Zarathustra and much more high-stakes pulp fiction focused on accountability. The tournament succeeded because the human designers gave the AIs boundaries that mirrored the boundaries of compelling human experience.
Concrete goals, tangible danger, and consequences that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So this tournament was a massive success in generating specific character-driven fiction, precisely because of those strict rules.
Right, the rules designed to hold the AI back. But now we have to ask the important question as we look toward the next generation of creative AI.
Go on.
That strict rule against exploring the nature of reality was the engine of this success. What happens when that restriction is lifted?
Will the characters, the specific details, and the concrete action just disappear entirely? Will the AI revert back to abstract philosophical musings the moment it's allowed to?
It forces us to ask, do we, as humans who consume this content, only find meaning when the storyteller, whether it's a person or a machine, is forced to focus on the immediate, tangible problem right in front of us?
Rather than the infinite, incomprehensible archive behind us.
Exactly.
We'll be right here when they release the results of the next duel to find out. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.